Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Then told the Netflix numbers, I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times, I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
It's all part of the show, man. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Pollock and Thurston. That's right. It's time to turn the froth around. Hello, Brandon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Remains to be seen. We're gonna see how my computer underwent a massive heart transplant over the last 24 hours. I had to clear up a ton of. I basically did like a system reset to get rid of.
Why?
All the garbage on my computer that was just slowing down speed.
Have you been forced? Now, we're both PC users here, correct?
Yes, PC till I die.
So yesterday was a seminal day in the history of Microsoft operating systems.
Oh, no. What did I miss?
This is the last day that Windows 10 is being supported, whatever that means. I mean, I assume that means updates and so forth.
I've avoided any Windows updates on this
computer. Windows 11. Yeah. I have not installed it yet, but I may be forced to.
Oh, well, in a nutshell, I pretty much had to eliminate all my cash. So every website I ever had, I was checked out of. I've had to reinsert all these logins, setting resets. StreamYard was just a mess this morning for me. We're back to normal, I hope. But yes.
Well, you're sounding good so far.
As long as I sound so good, we are 2 minutes and 25 seconds into this show. No issues so far. But man, I was in a lot better of a mood last week. Usually it is me lamenting the your poor Buffalo Bills, but now the shoe is on the other foot. The Toronto Blue Jays, who are riding high, kicked the New York Yankees to the curb. But then unfortunately, we ran to the Pacific Northwest, and now we are down 2-0 to the Seattle Mariners. Game 3 tonight. I'm not giving up hope, but it's not looking good, Brandon. We're down 2-0, but I'm not jumping off this bandwagon yet. I think we can come back.
And this is a best of three series that we're still
This is best of
this
seven.
This is seven. So, okay, this is the pennant.
Yeah, winner goes to the World Series to face, the Dodgers are up 2-0 on the Brewers. And I don't know, we're shaping up for a Seattle-LA final, a West Coast World Series matchup, unless Toronto can steer the ship here and turn things around.
For the sake of the Nielsen ratings, I mean, you definitely don't want Toronto to win because Toronto doesn't really count towards your Nielsen ratings.
I mean, that is front and center, the concern in New York among Major League Baseball officials that they, what good is the numbers we're generating on Rogers Sportsnet as compared to Fox, where for this postseason, I will say I've had my fill of John Smoltz. I'm definitely taking the Rogers Sportsnet broadcast over. I'll take Buck Martinez and Dan Shulman any day of the week. But that's our baseball segment for the week, and probably will be over by this time next week for yours truly. But let us go back to the real showdown that occurred last week. We're going to get into many topics on today's show, but we start off, you know, we're delayed now because of this extra day to tabulate all of the television viewership. So last week we had the Super Tuesday, or as I would call it, maybe a mediocre Tuesday. Let's be honest here with this showdown between AEW Title Tuesday and NXT Showdown, the previously named Invasion, until it was pointed out, probably not the best idea on the 3 year or the 2 year mark since the Israeli-Palestinian conflict began. So we have Title Tuesday doing 321,000 viewers, a 0.07 in the 18 to 49 demo. And then NXT Showdown on CW. So we are comparing here cable. We are comparing cable versus network, one show with a streaming component versus one with the other. But other than that, this is pure apples to apples, right, Brandon?
Pretty much. I mean, who knows? There's at least a few percent, maybe, I don't know, 5 or 10, that'd be my guess, about how many people are watching on Dynamite. Nonetheless, I mean, it's Dynamite out of its time slot.
Just putting all the qualifiers out there. It did not come close. Showdown did 625,000 viewers and a 0.12 in the 18 to 49 demographic. So they were up over their number the previous week. Also going against the Mariners-Tigers game on FS2 and the big Blue Jays-Yankees game, where the Blue Jays hauling in nearly 5 million viewers and a 1.05 in the 18 to 49 demo. So suffice to say, Toronto won the Tuesday night battle. But for wrestling purposes, when you look at last year's numbers, it's a little off because we're looking at the second week NXT was on CW and it did a sizable number. I mean, we were talking a 0.21 in the demo last year for a show with Randy Orton. While Title Tuesday last year, I mean, it was fairly comparable. They did 329,000 viewers a year ago, 0.10 in the demo. But, you know, this was a much better promoted show, I thought, in the NXT TNA Showdown event. AEW, it had some very good matches, but was loosely, you know, put together in the ensuing days. Most of this card was announced on Saturday's Collision going into it. It did not feel as though this were a head-to-head battle that AEW was approaching with the same level of intensity as NXT did, where they peaked for this show with TNA.
Yeah. Dynamite did almost the same number it did the prior year. And I think, was it last year going against the vice presidential debate that wrestling fans are probably not watching anyway? So, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, that was a big number for NXT because it was very early weeks, but nowhere close for AEW. Does this mean that TNA, now TNA was all over the show, correct?
TNA was all over the NXT show. Yes.
Yes.
We had the Survivor Series matches. We had Mustafa Ali on this show. Lots of TNA involvement.
So the debate is on for who the real showdown was. Who's the number two company? Isn't that right?
Yeah, this was clearly a battle for who is the number two company, which is an assertion that you can throw out there. And I guess it doesn't get challenged by a whole lot of logic behind it. But yes, TNA battling for the number two position in some people's minds. It does segue into this discussion I want to have, because TNA, they had their big pay-per-view on Sunday, Bound for Glory. Did you see any Bound for Glory, Brandon?
I did not. I saw some still shots of the closing scene. I did see some clips of the closing scene with Mike Santana and I did see Carlos Silva come into the ring and make sure that he put that belt on his shoulder. And then he also, I believe, what did he celebrate with his daughter?
Yes, his daughter was in the ring, handed the title over. This was a polarizing pay-per-view. The highs and lows of TNA, some great stuff, some poor stuff, and stuff in between. But the number that they put out, so the last figure we got from WrestleTix listed tickets distributed for the show at about 6,048. And then on the broadcast, TNA announcing 7,798 at the auditorium in Lowell, Massachusetts, which even if you want to just completely throw out the TNA released number, 6,000 is still a very strong number in that market, considering that NXT came nowhere close to that when they ran the same venue back in August for the Heatwave show, that AEW is going to nearby Boston in just a couple of weeks. They are nowhere near that number. But I think it does somewhat force us to look at some of these numbers and what are we assessing? And for a number like this, 7,794 was the announced attendance that TNA had. So this surpasses their previous North American record that was set back at Slammiversary and definitely projects them on, like, clearly number two at the end of the day.
Well, I mean, we know that they had close to this. I'm about to look up what the WrestleTix number was. But they had close to this in terms of distributed, but that is tickets distributed, and this is their official number, 7,794. Who knows what that includes? There are many games that can be played with attendance. There are many different kinds of attendance measurements. There is the number of tickets sold. There is the number of tickets distributed. There are the number of tickets used, the scan count, the turnstile count. Those are all discrete, you know, genuinely different numbers. But of course, there's the heartbeat count. We can't forget the heartbeat count.
The heartbeats are the most reliable data figure. Okay, how many heartbeats did Bruno Sammartino attract when there was an age restriction at Madison Square Garden? That's what I want to know. How many adult heartbeats were present?
Maybe somewhere around 30,000. So if Russell takes at 6,623, some 1,000 less. In any case, this is a high attendance.
Sorry, what was that? What was that last figure? 6,000.
6,623.
Okay, so that's an updated figure from the last one I saw, which was the afternoon of Bound for Glory. So, yeah. So I mean, at 6,600, I think at the end of it, like, that's still it's a great number for a TNA. Whether we, and this is where I wanted to introduce this topic, is as we are moving forward and there's the proliferation of streaming for a lot of these companies that we can't necessarily account for. And then for a TNA, it's the perfect example of one where attendance is almost all we have to go by for TNA. And my question to you would be that, like, do you feel, as you're assessing a WWE, an AEW, a TNA, is attendance like the most reliable figure that we can look at when we're probably not going to know how this show performed on pay-per-view? We get no television data for Impact. And, like, this is a very strong endorsement of TNA having all of this momentum. And that's kind of how this is being judged, and not knowing, like, how well did this show perform? Is, like, where is their television audience in comparison to a Collision or a Dynamite? And we're kind of just left with attendance. Is that a reliable sample into, like, maybe that is the most consistent way to look at people actually spending money or leaving their house to go watch a pro wrestling show?
Well, what is the question that we're asking? Is it, who is the number two company? I mean, I guess that needs a more...
I guess if I were to ask you, was Bound for Glory a successful show? And attendance-wise, like, that seems like a no-brainer. But that's kind of all that we can judge it upon. And there are a lot of unknowns. AEW, it's somewhere in the middle because, you know, we get attendance. I think we get a fairly clear picture of their viewing audience. We don't get HBO Max numbers, but I don't think anyone's expecting, like, the HBO Max numbers to be such an amount that it is putting Dynamite or Collision at different tiers in terms of the added viewership. And then pay-per-view, I mean, we get estimates. It's not like we get hard numbers released from AEW or, like, a third party that can completely give us a sense of what the pay-per-view buys are. And then with WWE, we clearly get, again, attendance is the consistency among these that we can judge the health of a WWE, and we at least do get television viewership, but we get no indication of how they're doing on how are these shows doing on Peacock? How did WrestlePalooza do on ESPN Plus? Like, there was no touting or a press release after WrestlePalooza. We can assume that means maybe that's bad news, but
it has to have been the least watched PLE since the pay-per-view era. I mean, there's almost no way it wasn't, right? Given the wide coverage of the network and of Peacock. I guess one way, I mean, this all seems kind of arbitrary which one to pick, but one way to measure this is revenue, right? And we know, I mean, WWE by far making well over $1 billion in revenue on a year. I think AEW making a couple hundred million dollars in revenue on a year. TNA?
Like, we know so little about TNA, is all I'm saying. Like, even AEW, that is a private company, like, without tooting your own horn too much here, Brandon, like, your breakdowns have been fantastic when it has come to that, I think, is a very reliable third-party assessment of AEW's revenue. TNA, it's just, there's so many questions, and I'm not stating this to, like, cast doubt, but it is, like, we're left with so little, and it is left to looking, and I don't even disregard the fact that attendance is like a very reliable barometer. Like, I think if you're going to sense momentum for a company, attendance will be reflected before a spike in television viewership, for instance, is. But like, we don't get anything out of Access TV in terms of what reach this is and how that will affect this pending media rights deal that Carlos Silva seems very confident that they will be finalizing.
I mean, you can slice it like this too. TNA's revenue is unknown. It's way lower. I don't know if there's any direct compensation you could say that they get from their TV deal, which is they're on the broadcaster of their parent company. But anyway,
we know it's not profitable. Like, that has been stated outright by Carlos Silva.
AEW, on the other hand, might be profitable this year. We know that, let's say, total attendance throughout the year. I mean, they're not doing weekly TV. I guess you could make the argument, which I don't think it would be a good argument, that they could do TV like AEW does. I don't think so. But there is this point that, you know, that is WrestleDream going to get to the attendance that this TNA show got to? I got, you know, WrestleTix estimating, I think this is the latest number, 5,528. That is lower than 6,623 for now, but we've got several days here to go, and it might get to that point.
Do you foresee that as we move forward towards this, like let's say we are looking at a further entrenchment of streaming for a lot of these companies? I mean, I just wonder where we're going to be when it comes to just assessing these companies on like a week by week basis, where there's going to be a lot of unknown figures, because I think it really behooves a lot of these companies, and more importantly, the streamers, to keep this data private. That's going to give us less insight, and like, maybe attendance is just going to be the equalizer that is, again, going to be, it's the most readily available, it's the most focused upon. Like, a Bound for Glory number, like, let's say, gets reported in 6 weeks as a pay-per-view estimate, it's less immediate than we have an attendance figure pretty much right away. And WrestleTix has really established itself as like a very credible third-party site that can monitor this stuff at the level that it does.
Yeah. And so I should mention, I mean, just minutes before we came on the air here, the University of Massachusetts Lowell has been sent a public records request. So we'll see if anything is returned from that. And I think these companies too are, as we discussed last week, these companies too are being protective of their information and being quite vigilant about it. Might even put into their contracts that you're not allowed to disclose any attendance or turnstile counts or ticket sales or anything like that. Like, over the years, like, if there's alternative data we can look at, I mean, there's online metrics, which I think have to be interpreted in a certain way, and they are certainly not directly tied to large revenue streams like TV rights. But it can look at the Google metrics. I think this is in the red here, TNA, but mm-hmm. I think it is probably going to even out when this week is done. This is weekly data points here, tipping a little bit over AEW here in the blue. Every country over this 5 years, AEW is out of. But there's that. There's YouTube views that we can look at for what that's worth. We've got Social Blade here showing, actually, you know, just recently, this is the total number, I think the total number of like all time video views across the entire lifetime of the channel. And remember, TNA's got quite a head start of somewhat 10, more than 10, 15 years ahead of AEW.
It does have a very strong subscriber number, but yeah, they've had a significant head start, right, in that department.
And at least in terms of the all-time views, so AEW is ahead of them now in terms of views. But that's, you know, so that's clearly an indicator that on a monthly basis, they're way ahead of TNA on YouTube. I mean, by every metric except for maybe and maybe not the pay-per-view event. They'll be ahead. Well ahead.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chop-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Well, I look forward to a Big Data Plus panel tackling the pay-per-view industry next. I think that's our next count to monitor. Do we want to stay on the our favorite Big Data Plus panel front and look at some of these past week's numbers? In addition to Title Tuesday and NXT Showdown, that was followed by SmackDown last Friday night, or we should say Friday morning if you were watching internationally on Netflix. So this was available outside the U.S. 12 hours in advance, but aired Friday night against Major League Baseball, including a major game that they were up against with 8+ million viewers, as well as the WNBA finals. And the show down a very small amount in total viewership, but would still be a new all-time low, replacing last week's, with 1,025,000 viewers and a 0.22 in the 18-49 demographic. Much harder competition than the week before. This was a tape delayed show, as I mentioned as well. But I mean, this certainly is not, this only contributes to the downward trend we have seen of SmackDown now 3 weeks into the new ratings methodology.
Yeah, it's virtually the same number as the prior week, where it was astoundingly low, but about the same number this week. So at least, I don't know, like it does, you know, suggest that maybe there was some change in the methodology from week one to week two here, but they're all way lower. The wrestling programs are. Should we clarify, like, I hope we can ask Nielsen about this at some point. Is it your understanding? Have you explained this to me already? Because someone else has, that the latest and most plausible theory, I think, is that the one of the big changes, perhaps the big change that is affecting wrestling viewership, is the fact that it is a long program. It's a 2-hour program at least. I think like virtually all these programs are about 2 hours overrun, give or take. And when you're watching a long program, Nielsen's new methodology may be determining that if you're watching this program for a long time, eventually we just determine that you're a passive viewer. You're just somebody who left the TV on, and that's not going to count in the methodology as strongly. And if you're a sports program, though, well, that part doesn't apply to you. So that's why you're seeing sports do, if anything, better, about the same. But wrestling, because it's a work, not being considered sports, not being accepted. This is not something we have confirmed, but that would start to explain this, if that's what's happening.
It's one theory, and it's one that, again, yeah, the like it does exclude regular sports. The question is wrestling considered sports or not? We don't know that. If it's not included in that sports exemption, that does remain plausible, that you would see like these are longer programs. That are you necessarily being counted toward this. You know, we're still 3 weeks into this. It is going to be one where I think a lot of theories have been posited. Like, obviously, there is something core to this. And the worst answer could just be that Nielsen was over-indexing wrestling fans, that this is not a glitch. This is not something that where wrestling has somehow found itself on the outside of this new methodology looking in, and that the fact is this is a more accurate gauge of the wrestling audience now that we have such a larger sample. That would be the worst news, because it would just state that, you know, wrestling really coasted by a smaller sample size that over-indexed how many people were watching these shows. And this new reality, while still placing these shows, you know, in the upper rankings, it's certainly been hit the hardest among any genre of programming under this new method.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there will be times, maybe, especially when you have two competing programs like we did this past Tuesday, where somehow or another we do get the old panel data, which, so a question I've been asked at least once this in the last week or so is, are we still getting old panel only data from the old methodology? Is that still, are we getting it in the public? No. Do not expect
some people are.
Do not expect that to be reported, but it might get reported sometimes on rare occasions, as we had by my count, three different Twitter accounts suddenly one after another tweeted looks to have been the old panel numbers for NXT and for Dynamite this past Tuesday.
Yeah, and listen, I think that that's, I mean, you can argue whether that's relevant data at this point anymore. It's not being acknowledged. It's not being, like, more than anything, like, these numbers are generally for advertisers, and the numbers that they are going to be going by are big data plus panel.
Well, so someone out there really cares enough to make sure that this information is out there, though. Yeah, and I would say this too. It's, you know, for all we know, but I don't have numbers to confirm what, you know, whether that was, it wasn't the big data plus panel numbers that Programming Insider reported and that I have confirmed. For all I know, those could have been Fast Nationals mixed in there. They could have had the Fast Nationals data, the old panel data, the big data plus panel, and decided to take whatever was the lowest Dynamite number and the highest NXT number, and, you know, made sure that got out. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, when you're getting these numbers, like, it does require, to me, like if I were just sent these numbers, I would have a lot of questions about these numbers.
So have you ever gotten them?
No.
I've never. Me neither. I wonder why that is, because we might ask questions about it, because they know that these numbers are misleading, and they distort the fair and accurate story about what the TV ratings are.
And that's the game. That this is not something new either, but I think it's very important to look at these numbers and be asking, well, why are these being sent and how are these being tabulated? Because there's a lot of different ways that you can arrive at this, and the why is the central question that you would be looking at. Beyond that, we also got the collision number from Saturday, and this show drawing a grand total, as I pull up the number here, 286,000 viewers and a 0.06 in the demo. So, you know, they doubled their demo, Brandon, from last week's show that started at 7 p.m. an hour earlier, but still not a frothy set of data, as we would state for Collision on Saturday night either, where, I mean, Collision has actually been, like, the least impacted show of the main ones that we have been talking about in this 3 week period. But certainly this was, not anything to write home about either.
Yeah. And I think the chart for people watching the video that we're showing here, you can see what the impact has been. And I guess Collision, it just, you know, it is of these, what's left here on the board, three different shows that have, that are being measured with Nielsen under traditional TV viewership. You know, Collision just has the least viewership and maybe therefore has the smallest sample. Maybe it has the least long running duration viewership or something like that. And that's why it's the least effective under the theory we mentioned earlier. So it's about in the same range as it was, you know, immediately before. Now we're talking about the we've got the preemptions excluded here, but you know, looking at where it was before, it was in the 280s is what it did in two of the last few weeks that it was under the old system.
Mm-hmm. And so tonight they will be doing a 3-hour show on TBS with 2 hours of Dynamite, followed by a 1-hour version of Collision. And then Saturday, a tailgate brawl, which would be the second month in a row that they do the pre-show before the pay-per-view on TNT leading into WrestleDream, which is also a nighttime pay-per-view for AEW, a rare one that they have not done since the spring. So
it's a vulnerability, isn't it? Somebody should run a show against that.
I've greatly enjoyed these afternoon AEW cards, but they will run this evening, pending any last-minute WWE announcements. I mean, maybe they've been keeping this close to their vest, and Saturday night they'll run something. But it looks like they have the wrestling audience to themselves that night. They're currently have an advance of 5,528 tickets distributed at the Chaffetz Arena in St. Louis, according to WrestleTix. The last time that they ran this arena was a Collision last December that drew 2,300, and prior to that, a Dynasty the Dynasty pay-per-view in April of last year that did over 6,600. So the question will be, I guess the 6,600 would be kind of your aim of your goal of what you are shooting for here. They did get a bit of a bump here coming up to 5,500, but certainly a big drop off from recent pay-per-views, all in Texas excluded.
There's also a Tony Khan conference call tomorrow.
That's right.
Three. So
what are you going to ask?
How many big data
plus panel references will be made on this call? I guess that depends if you get through it on.
I'm sure that I trust that will be asked.
I think it will too.
Yeah. And I think that is a pressing question. I think that's a question for that. Like we said the other week, I think that is a question that will come up likely on the TKO earnings call, which is in a few weeks, is on the 5th of November. I think that, what does that mean for your media rights? And are your media rights worth less than you thought they were because of this?
I guess on the returns, increasing our margins.
I guess if when I was doing my estimates ahead of the AWTV deal, trying to estimate what their media rights were worth, I was using their viewership as a proportion of WWE's viewership and then extrapolating the payment from that. Now, if SmackDown's down to a similar extent, I guess under that math, it's not. It's about the same.
Yeah, I think that bears itself out. Yeah, I'm interested to see, because I would think that a Tony Khan, I think this would be a pretty significant topic, how much he would be willing to go into this, and even what theories he might have or would be willing to share about this. Hopefully he has asked about this. It's a very big story, and one that I could see getting a lengthier answer out of, potentially.
I'm sure it'll get a lengthy answer about Max.
WWE was in Australia this past week. I just added these to the notes. They ran three nights in Perth at the RAC Arena. They announced, almost 14,000 per night. They announced a grand total of just over 40,000. This was WWE announcing this. And then ran Melbourne on Tuesday in front of 12,107. Of course, this was part of their deal with Western Australia that brought a UFC pay-per-view there just a couple of weeks ago, and then coming back with this WWE event. So this is a multi-year deal, and thus we got plenty of scenic shots of beautiful Perth, a great place to vacation if you are a WWE consumer anywhere in the world.
Yes, that's the purpose of these. So this was the one that they said was, what, $16 million for this grouping of events that's going across multiple years and includes UFC. So who knows how long, who knows how many events. So it's tough to compare the site fee to the site fees of others, which we know it tops out so far at $7.2 million for SummerSlam, which reminds me, I should probably do a follow-up with the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority. But yes, we don't have any WrestleTix numbers to compare this against. Unfortunately, I'm sure it was under some non-Ticketmaster ticket outlet.
Elimination Chamber next February. This was reported in the Observer last week. Brandon, you confirmed this date that Elimination Chamber is coming back to the U.S. in Chicago. Venue to be determined. We could assume Allstate Arena. I don't think they're going outdoors to hold Elimination Chamber in February. That would be my thought. And this will be their first premium live event in the city since CM Punk's big return at Survivor Series 2023, and will also be their last major show before the WrestleMania back-to-back nights in Vegas.
Yeah, Allstate Arena does seem likely. I mean, given that that's where they did SmackDown in September, that's where they've done, I think, all of the events in the Chicago area of late. Which, I mean, I don't mean to make this about AEW, but it's interesting that AEW never runs Allstate Arena, given, I mean, that Tony's from Chicago and the number of events that they have ran in Chicago. When they've done pay-per-views, I guess I could point to, well, Tony's always been about going back to the old Sears Center, whatever it's called now, the Now Arena, which is off in the suburbs. I know because I've been there, away from Chicago, in Schaumburg, I think it is. But they've also gone to the United Center, and it raises a question about whether there's some sort of exclusivity there or non-written implied exclusivity incentive there.
Written in Vince McMahon's blood after WrestleMania 2. It's like, we will be the only purveyors.
This is the old Rosemont Horizon.
Yes,
why would you? You would think that a Tony Khan who loves wrestling history would want to be in the Rosemont Horizon with Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair, Chi-Town Rumble.
Well, it's open territory for Tony Khan to venture into, but it will not be probably before or after within 60 days of Elimination Chamber next year. So that brings our pay-per-view calendar up to, we've got Royal Rumble January 31st in Riyadh, tickets available. Elimination Chamber February 28th. Then we go to the back-to-back nights of WrestleMania. They have announced back-to-back nights of SummerSlam at the beginning of August in Minneapolis at U.S. Bank Stadium. And then the end of August, it is WWE Make Good coming to New Orleans with Money in the Bank.
That's right.
Who needs WrestleMania? You guys are getting Money in the Bank and an IOU. An IOU, a WrestleMania.
Look at WrestleMania maybe someday if Saudi Arabia doesn't want to continue to pay for it.
That's it. They just said in the future. The future is infinite. One day, you fans will get it. I really hope come all these year-end specials, we get that big announcement by Dwayne Johnson repeated on all these shows of him announcing WrestleMania coming back to New Orleans. You liar, Dwayne. Ridge Holland, let's chat about WWE just taking the axe here to a bunch of contracts over the past week affecting their ID program, former LFG talent, NXT talent, and in the case of Ridge Holland, an injured performer. So Ridge Holland announced himself that his contract is not going to be renewed next month when it comes due. He is currently recovering from a Liz Frank foot injury that he sustained at a TNA taping several weeks ago. So he is out for the next 6 to 7 months. He did note that despite being injured while being sent out by WWE, WWE is going to pay for his rehab while the man cannot work over these next 6 to 7 months. So that's kind. The deal, Fightful adding that his initial deal expired last November and he agreed to a 1-year extension at a $200,000 pay cut. So I'm sure this guy was probably the difference between TKO reaching expectations this quarter and not. And thus they had to make the hard decision that this man who is unable to wrestle, do anything for the next 6 to 7 months, he is going to be cut next month. And I mean, it's more so just you look at several of these cuts. There's another one with like the ID system where Kylie Rae, who just found out she is pregnant for the second time, her deal is not being renewed either. So if you think optics go into any of this, you would be very naive to think that is of any concern here of where these decisions are made.
And I want to read a part of this report from Fightful too about the rehab in particular, where I assume this is Sean Ross Sapp writing. There were many fans who acted as if paying for rehab for Rich Holland was a goodwill gesture. However, Rich Holland was injured while working a TNA booking that was part of his WWE contract. Not paying for his rehab would have been a situation that likely would have led to a successful lawsuit on Menezes, which is his real last
Luke
name.
Luke Menezes is his name.
On his part. It's not something that they're doing according to Fightful here as a goodwill gesture, but something that they would have been in some legal trouble if they didn't. Now, what kind of legal trouble can WWE get into with regard to its talent, I think, is a question, given that we know that in at least, one, two, three, four cases, AEW has people under arbitration clauses. I wouldn't be surprised if WWE has people under arbitration clauses. Come to think of it, I don't think we've seen lawsuits involving talent in WWE for years that come to my mind. This is not something that you would have probably if there was a wrestlers association or union of some sort, but this is the world.
Excuse me?
Instead. Yes.
Not familiar with these terms you're just dropping on us here. It's one where I point this out because this story is not going to get a whole lot of attention, especially outside of wrestling, but it is one that it sometimes forces you to just like shake your head and apply this to like any other major league sport of where something like this could occur and the cost of what is being saved here. Like we're talking like fractions of their talent budget that
just what it
are
is.
Being
saved. I mean, it's an eat what you kill world.
Well, they're killing a lot, but I'll also push back a little because you have sensed that there is this belief, especially among talent and others that have followed for a long time, like, you can say whatever you want about Vince McMahon, but Vince wouldn't have done this. I was like, I seem to recall like numerous examples that come to mind from Dawn Marie being fired when she was pregnant, Test being fired after he had neck surgery and was going to miss a year. I remember couples being fired on the same day, like Charlie Haas and Jackie Gator were. I also remember not too long ago, talent that went into the absolute unknown at the Performance Center during the pandemic to ensure that this company got its television to air and mass cuts in the midst of a pandemic. So
I'm
not going
to
say
Vince wanted to cut the Twitch streams and the YouTube streams from their rights to do that as well.
It's like I can't extrapolate and say Vince McMahon would have made this exact same move, but to say that like Vince McMahon did not make some like very very similar if not worse moves, like it's a reality of this company. And if your defense is it's a publicly traded company that has to meet this quarter's expectations, you can have that. But that does not mean that a move like this doesn't require some kind of criticism, pushback. And you would think among talent that would look at this, that there is an understanding here of like what you are at this core level. Like you are a value proposition that has a number next to your name. And the higher that number is, that both equates value, but it also is also a risk factor when that's ultimately what you are going to be viewed by is that number when you're at a Ridge Holland level and, we'll pay for your rehab. That's great. But this guy has five children and can't make a living for the next 7 months.
He has five children.
Yes.
No, I think it's clearly this is a great deal for WWE. It's a great deal for TKO shareholders. It's not a great deal for wrestlers, but this is a deal that wrestlers are all too happy to embrace, and everybody's got to live out their dream. And I think they all just look at it as this is the way it is, and there's no way to change it. And this is kind of embraced in this sort of culture of wrestling, which would require the biggest names of all to be on board with causing any sort of change that would, that would result in some sort of policy. Let's say that, if somebody's cut if you want to cut somebody while you're injured, you have to give them, X number of days of pay for this, but he's not getting pay, right? He's announced that he's free to work on November 14th. So in a month, and this is an injury that's going to take 6 to 7 months to recover from. So, good luck. Good luck making money.
What are your Mount Rushmore of callous WWE cuts? Hosted by Ari Emanuel on his next podcast, maybe.
Yes.
The other cuts that we saw over the past week, the most notable ones being Wesley, who's been in their system for about 5 years. Lance Anawahi, who never made it onto NXT programming. And then you have Stevie Turner, who's pretty much just an authority figure at this point on Evolve and NXT. Jamar Hampton, Summer Sorrell, Darko Knox, Hayes Jameson, BJ Ray, Jin Tala. And then from the ID system, we know that Zeta Steel, Zara Zocker, and Kylie Ray will not have their deals renewed. There have been some ID deals that have been renewed. So this is not necessarily
the end of the WID program.
It's not the end of the ID program, but just given that these deals are coming up after like about a year, it does give you like a pause to look at the last year of these ID deals. And if you are WWE and assessing like what was our expectation versus what have we gotten out of this, I mean, at its core, it's a very little amount that you are investing in this program. Like these deals are rumored to be around $40,000 a year for these talents to basically work an independent scene and have a bit of a cushion in this amount to go out and just continue your indie career.
Has anybody, because this is supposed to be the pipeline, right? It's WID or WNIL. Let's talk about that too. Has anybody gone from WID to NXT TV?
We've only seen like Sean Legacy is one that has like popped up, but not into any like recurring role. Like we've seen talents like at most focused on the Evolve level, but not so much like none come to mind that like have made the leap permanently to NXT other than the odd cameo.
And NIL is one, right?
NIL, like a talent going from NIL to
yes.
NXT?
Yes, these NIL programs that have been around for years.
Yeah, like really we have seen, like the pipeline is almost now, like I would say NIL is like your bottom rung. Then you've got your like ID talents, which are not necessarily exclusive to you. They could still sign elsewhere. Then you have your like LFG prospects as well. Like there's that whole tier. And then you could go to Evolve, and then you could go to NXT. So it's like, how many of these levels are necessary if you are WWE? And I guess that begs the question of like the viability of this ID program. Like, I don't think like a year into this program, like we had surmised, like how much control is WWE going to have on these talents? What limitations will they have at various independents? Is this just to create a firewall so they can't sign with AEW? That doesn't appear to be the case. Like, it doesn't really seem to have borne out any of the immediate concerns to this. It puts some extra money in these talents' hands. But again, if you are WWE, what necessarily are you? Like, if you're just looking to make an easy cut here or there, obviously some of these deals were considered expendable.
Yeah, it's something that warrants a bigger research project in terms of. Yeah, I remember doing the research a couple of years ago on like what was the output of the Performance Center, and it's you got to measure people as like, okay, if they had this many matches before they ever showed up in NXT, then maybe put them into this bucket and so forth. And, you know, especially on the men's side, the output isn't great. How many of these NIL recruits who have been announced with lots of fanfare and press releases, looks great on ESPN. How many of them have made it now? These you know, recruit classes are a couple years old. How many of them have actually gone on to either do any training even, or much less made it to TV is a question in addition to the ID program.
Yes. And after the Knox Pro incident, maybe vetting the
schools. Yeah. Maybe rethinking. Yes.
All right. Mark Shapiro has been added to the all-star list of forthcoming depositions in the ongoing shareholder lawsuit, as Brandon has reported that Mark Shapiro will be deposed in the lawsuit. Scheduled November 18th, Shapiro, among the most high-profile executives involved in the TKO merger, who apparently had not been subpoenaed yet until new filings, which were reviewed by WrestleNomics and appearing on the docket on Monday. Shapiro, along with Ari Emanuel, a leading executive of Endeavor at the time of the merger in 2023, and the consolidated shareholder and class action suit, which started in November 2023, alleges that Vince McMahon predetermined the sale process and steered WWE toward a deal with Endeavor when shopping WWE for a company transaction in 2023. And unless a miracle occurs, probably not going to expand our audio library with his deposition, unfortunately.
No, I don't expect we'll ever hear audio. We might hear. So again, I want to say with when we're talking about these depositions, which are all upcoming, a Mount Rushmore of deponents.
This is TKO's Riyadh Comedy Fest lineup, yes. And then some. I mean, could you imagine? Like this would be a way more interesting podcast lineup than anything Ari Emanuel can book.
Excerpts could become part of this lawsuit later, maybe, or a trial. And again, this is a civil trial. It's brought by shareholders. This is not a criminal thing. This is a shareholder lawsuit. Shareholders would, if they get what they want, would get money out of WWE for this. And we have October 24th is Stephanie McMahon. November 4th is Paul Levesque. November 12th is Vince McMahon. November 19th is Nick Khan. December 2nd is Ari Emanuel. So all the greatest hits are there, in addition to Mark Shapiro now on November 18th. We'll see what happens. There's also been some action on the docket today. This gives you an idea of how related to the sexual misconduct allegations this case is. First of all, the plaintiffs alleged that that Vince McMahon steered this towards Endeavor because he believed, according to the theory, that he would not be allowed to stay with the company after the end of the transaction, but he had a friendly relationship with Ari Emanuel, so Ari Emanuel would allow him to do so. That is their theory. That is what they allege. So there's been some litigation over whether the sexual misconduct topics, to what extent those should be allowed to be part of discovery. What was happening on the docket today is they're agreeing to not only seal the names of people who Vince McMahon may have agreements with, I read that as NDAs, but they're also going to put an extra layer of privacy on the names of these people. We know one is Janelle Grant, but that her name may be anonymized as part of this anyway, so that not only would their names not appear on the public versions of these documents, but that most of the people probably involved in litigation would not even be able to know who those people are, and that their names instead would be anonymized. They would be given names like Jane Doe or whatever, Jane Doe 1, Jane Doe 2, and only very specific people would even have access to the key to correspond the identities there. So the main takeaway here is that the NDAs themselves are apparently quite a subject in this lawsuit, at least when it comes to discovery at this point.
I promise, John Doe or not, you give me an excerpt from Mark Shapiro, I will be able to decipher if it was said by the man or not. Maybe this will demand a dramatic reading from us as Jane and John Doe's.
Yeah, I mean, I keep remarking when we talk about this, like this case started in like November 2023, so it's pretty far along, and it's not that common that lawsuits, we're going to talk about one lawsuit, I think, that's definitely not going to discovery. It's not common that lawsuits get to discovery like this one has. And it could shed a great deal of light on the controversies and news stories of the last few years.
I mean, it's the same trajectory that the UFC antitrust suit took, in that, yes, there was a settlement at the end of this, but in the lead up to it, which again, that suit was filed in December of 2014. We just got the settlement over the past number of months. And in that time, there was so much like documents filed on behalf of UFC that people like John Nash and many others, like, we have learned so much about the UFC's business through that discovery process. Like, we got to see the exaggerated claims Conor McGregor made about, like, how much he has made in these fights. We now know what he made per fight. We know what a Brock Lesnar made for UFC 200. We know that the fact that this is not a theory anymore about UFC keeping its fighter wages at a certain level. Like, it was in the prospectus that it will be in line with 16 to 20% of revenue. Like, they have pretty much a self-imposed cap of what this is going to be. And that's all in black and white to see. So this process, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get anywhere near the level of insight through a case like this. But for the UFC one, I mean, it's the most we've ever learned about what is a private company in the UFC, at least at that point, before it had merged.
And I would view it through the lens with which we view, I think, the topic that we were just discussing about cutting talent. I would view it through, you know, I don't know if there have been, you know, discussions about settling this lawsuit, but I would think that they're that TKO is probably calculating it as, you know, how much is it going to cost for us to litigate it? How much is going to, would it cost for us to settle it? Well, it's apparently still good enough to settle, or I'm sorry, it's apparently still good enough to litigate. And maybe it gets all the way to trial. We'll see. And to add, this is a case in Delaware Chancery Court, which is where many big corporate lawsuits happen. And it's not a federal case, so I'm really, I think, the only one covering it, at least with the original documents.
So obviously, a very similar thought process went through the legal participants in the case that this show has been the only one following, I think, and that is the big Terry.
TMZ's not on top of this?
Terry McCoy and Nick Bollea case against Bubba the Love Sponge, a.k.a. Todd Klemm. Well, folks, it's been settled. A notice went out on the docket this week that this cause is hereby dismissed without prejudice and subject to the right of the parties within 60 days of the date hereof to submit a stipulated form of final order or judgment or request an extension of time should they choose, or for any party to move to reopen the action upon good cause being shown. After that 60-day period, however, without further order, this dismissal shall be deemed with prejudice. So, in a nutshell,
our long federal nightmare. Oh, wait, not that one. Our federal nightmare in the Middle District of Florida is over.
You know, I thought that this case would outlive the government shutdown, but no, it is. Bubba the Love Sponge and Nick Bollea have reached peace before the Democrats and Republicans. So that brings.
Do we know what the settlement terms were?
Unfortunately, this will be another settlement issue.
Free copies of the documentary.
I won't confirm or deny if I have received the screener copy now of the documentary.
Oh, are you allowed to talk about that? Are you under embargo?
No, I'm actually not under an embargo. I can actually say I have got a screener copy. I've just not got around to watching it yet. Brandon refuses to watch it as well. But
no.
It will be reviewed at a future date because I feel I owe it to our audience, because I don't know of anyone else beyond that screening in Tampa that has written and reviewed this thing publicly. So I will have to sit down. I'm going to have to book a day off work to sit down and watch the length of this thing because it's gigantic. And
will you watch it on 2x speed?
Of course.
Okay. Well, you can save yourself an hour and a half that way.
I will. All right. Let's go to we did get asked this earlier. So today is the on sale. Is it the pre-sale or the for John Cena's final match that's coming up December 13th on Saturday night's main event in Washington, D.C. And we were asked, are you guys able to fit in the John Cena retirement, having over 57,000 signups? This, according to Andrew Baidala, with crazy ticket prices. And Andrew Baidala this morning tweeted that currently 57,325 are in the virtual line for John Cena's final match in DC. Regardless of the number, it's an extraordinary demand that I think you would expect for, in many ways, like the whole WWE year has been focused on this particular send off for John Cena. So it's not surprising. What this is really going to be a test, in my opinion.
So this is, by the way, based on him going into Ticketmaster, it sounds like, and getting in line himself. And they tell you on Ticketmaster when you do this, this is how many people are ahead of you. Yeah.
Yes. Which, a side note on that, my wife and I tried to get Blue Jays tickets, and she got into the line. 80,000 people were ahead of her to get tickets for, I think it was game one, to put in comparison. So I'm not saying the Toronto Blue Jays are more popular than John Cena, but I'm kind of hinting at that.
Why do you have to make everything about tribalism?
That's kind of how I'm wired. What this is going to be to me is, this is going to be the greatest amount that you can attract for Peacock in this slow end to the relationship between WWE and Peacock, at least for these premium live events.
And as Andrew points out here, they could have done a stadium. They probably could have. Yeah.
I don't know what's available in December in Washington, doing this one outdoors, but
well, they could have gone anywhere here. Clearly, I mean, they wanted to get a site fee out of the Boston area. Apparently, they couldn't, and they got something. I have sent my FOIA, and no returns on that yet from the DC area.
I think you should be acclimating yourself with all Washington officials for this as a tee up for the White House event next July. I think you should station yourself in Washington over these coming months.
Yes, I have to brush up on my FOIA law.
Is it at all? I mean. Yeah, I would love to know what the Yes, Andrew Badal also notes some lower level tickets, non-platinum and non-center seats, were priced at $460 per ticket after fees. Current allotment of platinum tickets available is on the floor, ranging from $1,657 per ticket up to $4,135 per ticket. So,
a unified platform. More.
Sorry.
I like the sound of that.
That's what I wanted there.
Oh, dude, he's grinning ear to ear today. Man, green t-shirt guy, I mean, might need to hand over the shirt off his back for that $4,100 ticket, front row, facing the hard cam.
Yes.
Well, there you go. They're going to do just a fine gate for, I think WWE, they'll be okay. They're going to be okay. They're going to come out of this year all right. That's my diagnosis on things. All right. If you want to get in any questions before the end of the show, we will try and take some as well. But we want to quickly just tee up the Observer Hall of Fame. It's we're going to do a preview of this maybe next week, a more in-depth one. But Brandon, you have received your ballot. And are there any names that immediately come to mind that will be 100% votes coming from the ballot of Brandon Thurston as you pour into the categories?
Well, in the past, I have voted for CM Punk. Don't see why I wouldn't this time. I'm looking at the ballot here. I think CM Punk is the person I've voted for before who is not in, right? And I think that's, I have voted for in the past, June Byers. So those are the two most likely.
I think those will both be on my ballot this year. Modern performers, include the Briscoes, Adam Copeland, Bill Dundee, FTR, Bill Goldberg, Samoa Joe, the Hardys, coming off the Bound for Glory at the Songa Center, Becky Lynch, Drew McIntyre, Mercedes Moné, John Moxley, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall as a duo, Randy Orton, CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, Seth Rollins, Sabu, just passed away back in April, Trish Stratus, and the Steiner Brothers. I've voted for Punk for many, many years. I would say, I haven't finalized my ballot yet, but I'm starting to get into it now and do all my notes. But Punk and Cody Rhodes will definitely be on my ballot, and I'm curious to see how much support Sabu gets this year, because I don't he's kind of never been like a real viable
shot,
candidate.
Probably.
But yeah. I mean, there is, you know, when someone
he has been on the ballot before, right?
Oh, he's been on the ballot all of these years. He just hasn't gotten the support. But this year. You know, it's not just his death, which caused a lot of reflection on him. There was the recent documentary that I don't know how many people ended up seeing, but there's that to this. That, I mean, if there's a guy that's going to get a real bump this year, Sabu would probably be one of those recipients for sure.
Other new people here, Drew McIntyre, I think is new. FTR.
Yeah, I can't see either of them getting all that much support. Like FTR, it's really just down to a like work standpoint. I mean, they've never been in a top position in any of the companies they've been in. Drew McIntyre, I mean, he's had some big programs, especially the Punk feud last year, but I can't see either getting a whole ton of support.
Mercedes Moné / Sasha Banks. I think
she's new to the ballot.
She's new. This is her first time ever.
First year on the ballot.
Okay. Oh, because she probably came of age or something like that. Okay. Yeah.
How do you contrast Mercedes with Becky Lynch? Who do you think has the stronger case? Becky, I think most would assume, is the one that I think is going to get votes above Mercedes.
I would have to think about it. I guess.
Why don't you think out loud on X and see what responses you get?
I'll tag all the Stan accounts too when I do it. I guess does Becky Lynch have an advantage of just the time that she's been in WWE? Since Mercedes Moné has been out of WWE, while yes, she's done some interesting things in different companies, sure. But it's, I guess, not, you know, I'm certainly not at the business level of WWE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for Becky, it's going to come down to a lot of your assessment of that, like 2018, 2019 period. And, you know, she's, I would say since the heel turn, I don't think she has been, you know, up until recently, I think she's become now more of a focal point But I mean, it's that period that I think is ultimately like the biggest weight behind Becky Lynch, where she ascended to a gigantic level of stardom at a time when WWE was not guilty of creating too many stars. Like, Becky was one that kind of fell into their lap, and to their credit, they ran with it. Like, that was not the plan for WrestleMania that year, and Becky just caught fire, and they changed plans and made her the big, you know, coronation at WrestleMania that year.
Other modern candidates, this discussion is going to be so upsetting. Roman Reigns is not in, correct?
No, he got in last year.
He did get in. Okay.
Yes,
he got in last year. I did get him in.
But Rollins and Moxley are on the ballot here.
Yes. I think Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes, I think, is...
I think it needs to be looked at very strongly.
Are you saying skeptically or...
No. I think it should be considered.
I'm voting for Cody Rhodes. I think at this point, it's... to me, I voted for him last year, and I think he's only had... another year as the top guy during what's still been like a really, really successful period in WWE. You contribute all the AEW influence that he had as well. I think like he more than meets the criteria for me. So I think he's a fairly strong one this year. In terms of the non-wrestling category, we've got Dave Brown, Zane Bresloff, Bobby Bruns, James Melby, Bill Mercer. Gorilla Monsoon is back on the ballot. A book just came out on Gorilla Monsoon by Brian Solomon. Mm-hmm. Rossi Ogawa, Reggie Parks, Morris Siegel, and then George Scott, Tony Schiavone, Kevin Sullivan, Mike Tenay, Ted Turner, Jesse Ventura, Roy Welch, Stanley Weston, Grand Wizard, and Koichi Yoshizawa.
Who is Koichi Yoshizawa?
He was a reporter in Japan that would... he pretty much informed like a lot of the U.S. reporters of pretty much what was going on in Japan, whether it be Dave Meltzer or Mike Tenay. Like, he was someone that took, like, he would do translations, he would explain the stories, he would, like, he's someone I never dealt with, and that's my hard issue of really evaluating his contributions. But from those people, it sounds like this guy was the architect of U.S. coverage of Japan that would not have existed in the clarity that we had if it wasn't for this guy and what he was doing in terms of relaying this, you know, this form of professional wrestling and explaining it to a English speaking audience through the reporters that he had contact with.
And he passed in 2023.
Yes.
From the non-wrestler list, I've been a regular voter of Jim Johnston and Reg Parks.
Yet, I voted for Ted Turner last year. I think that it's one that he's a weird case, but I think it's like a fairly strong one. I've never voted for Jesse Ventura. I'm giving it at least some more thought this year. I'll vote for Morris Siegel, and I will vote for Bobby Bruns, and then I have a few others that I'm on the fence about. But it's a tougher category because you're kind of looking at like what their specialty was, and like for a Gorilla Monsoon. Like, being in this category, you're not, it's kind of excluding his in-ring
as a non-wrestler. That's
exactly. Yeah. So you're not viewing his feud with Bruno or, you know, the work with Muhammad Ali. You're strictly looking at him like as an announcer, as a, you know,
as a minority shareholder. Agent? Yeah.
Yeah. Like when he, you know, had
as a president,
how well did he take that Vader bomb?
Yeah.
You know, at one point was like, he was thought like he was going to be the heir apparent until like Vince Jr. got into the industry and he like kind of forced his way and got the company. But it was kind of believed that Gorilla would be the guy leading the WWF after Vince Sr. So, I mean, it's and then ends up working with Vince Jr. for over, you know, until the end of his life in 1999 as well. Mm-hmm. So there, those are some of the just a quick overview of some of the candidates that we'll get into more at a further time. It's still weeks away until the deadline for the Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame.
It's always on election around election day, real yes. election day.
And I'm getting our non-producer screaming in my ear that if you want to hear more Hall of Fame talk, I'll be doing a show with David Bixenspan this Friday, and we'll be going into more Hall of Fame discussion, which has prompted me to go more into my notes. I don't know who I'm going to be on the show with, but I will be on with David Bixenspan and Masked Men number 1 and 2, I assume, as well. So look out for that Friday on the Between the Sheets podcast.
Well, that's the right place to do it with their handle of history.
All right, everybody. We're going to...
You want to mention very briefly, the yes. LECBA has...
Yes.
Has responded. I don't know how many people are really aware of this. So...
Why don't you just summarize what
in a purely factual manner at this time, I requested records to the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority, which is the government agency that is and will be and is working with WWE to bring WrestleMania there both this year and next year. There's been a long delay on them giving me records. It's gone on since late April till now. They've produced no records. I filed a petition at the end of August in court in Nevada to get them to produce records. They have not responded until this past Friday. This past Monday, they have responded. And this is the first time that they have responded. They detail, among other things, that my request has triggered 11,000 responsive records. So I will be replying. I am preparing to reply to this.
So they got in at the deadline, is what you're telling us.
So not only I filed a petition, they had a deadline to respond to that. That deadline passed.
Okay.
I filed motion for default, which is what you do when somebody doesn't respond to your lawsuit. They were right before the deadline for that.
Did you ever think you'd have to be covering your own lawsuit?
It's a minor thing, but to be transparent with people.
Well, we always appreciate it very much, Brandon. Next week, we're going to be on an hour earlier next week. We'll be on at noon Eastern next Wednesday. So circle your calendar and we will be back here.
1 hour earlier.
1 hour earlier. Exactly. You know what
for this those means? The world, just minus one.
Yeah. This does a number on Collision, but we know you will be much more.
Unless you're on a 12-hour clock, then don't minus one because then you'll be at zero.
Okay. Well, at this point now, we have just confused everybody. Noon Eastern, we'll be here.
No matter which cable provider you have, it's on YouTube.
Yes. You don't have to log in and your provider makes you pay an extra $30 for this. We're free. Free on a weekly basis. Also available at your disposal. It is all of the work happening at WrestleNomics. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Substack.com/Wrestle. Give me the
WrestleNomics.substack.com. But mainly people are at Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. Also at WrestleNomics.com. Check out the data and reference area of the website. We're getting some new stuff added there and putting things in more organized order. So if you're looking for wrestling business related data, you will be able to find more of it there in better order and now and soon.
You can also catch my work over at postwrestling.com and patreon.com/postwrestling. Thursday, Wei Ting and I are going to be reviewing the 1992 G1 Climax. Okay, this was our, we get submitted requests to review old stuff. We got the 1992 G1, where not only do you get Masahiro Chono going for his second crown in a row after the inaugural G1, but ravishing Rick Rude. We're going through the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. How will Rick Rude cut heel promos in a Japanese audience in 1992? How offensive can Rick Rude be, and how varied can his slurs be? All that and more coming up on Rewind Away as front row for these final three nights of the G1, we have Dusty Rhodes and, in his magenta-wearing greatness, Bill Watts.
That's right, front row. Oh, front and center,
looking so lively. No chanting, no signs. These two looked as though they were being put through a test to sit through all of this wrestling. Something else. So there you go. That's coming up on Thursday, and we'll be live tonight 1 hour later. All these different times because Dynamite's going 3 hours tonight. We'll be live at 11 Eastern on the Post Wrestling Cafe. So that's going to wrap things up. Thanks to everyone for joining us, and we're back next week at noon Eastern.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.